Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. On today's show, we're talking about the play Blue Ticket and also blue ticketing of suspected gay men in the 1960s who were exiled from Juno, put on the ferry, and sent away from our community. In the studio, we have playwright Mo Longworth, also Bobby Lee Daniels. And joining us now by phone is Mary Lou Spartz. Mary Lou, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Mary Lou, tell us a little bit about yourself before you tell us your story.
Oh, I always get kind of it's hard to know what to say, I guess. I grew up here in Juneau, and then traveled, and then when I came back to Juneau, I met this cute guy and got married and had a family. And so I was in the process of having a family in the 1960s and living on Star Hill. And there were a lot of big families living on Star Hill at that time. There may well still be, but at that time it was not unusual to have big families of 10 or more children. So that's where I was at that point.
All right. And thinking about your blue ticket story, can you set the scene for us a bit?
Well, one of the families that lived on the Star Hill at that time was the Lesh family, Jack and Sally, and they're eight. And I was Sally was just a wonderful, wonderful lady, and you may have read her books. She had two books published. She's no longer with us, but she had two books published. One of them was called All My Houses, and the other one was called A Lunch at Toad River. Recommend both of them if you're interested in Southeast history and Juneau history. And I would go to see her on a regular basis. She had this big family, and she always had a good advice about dealing with rearing children, and I was badly in need of that. So I went over one day to talk to her, and I walked into her kitchen, and she said, "Well, did you hear about I don't remember what she called it." They were sending people out on a blue ticket because they were gay. I don't even know if we used the word gay. I think we used the word homosexual. But, and she said, down at the clinic where her husband was a member of the medical, the administrative person there was one of those who had been blue ticketed out of town. And I was kind of stunned. I didn't really know what she was talking about. I knew that there were people who were, as we called them, homosexual, and that was no great surprise to me. But they were very obviously so in the community. But I had never heard of any problem. Of course, if I wasn't naive, I was very close to it. I just accepted what she had to tell me. She said there was a group that just went around and singled out single men who they suspected of being gay, and that they trundled them off to wherever they went next. So that was about the extent of our conversation. I was really surprised to hear about this gentleman who was the administrative person for the clinic, because I was very deeply involved at the time with the Juno Douglas Little Theater, and he was one of our participating members, and he had mostly he was a behind the scenes kind of guy, kind of a techie, or he'd do whatever you ask him to do. Very nice. I found him very, very compatible, and it was just, what are they talking about kind of moment for me. So that was when I first encountered the vigilante group that went around and made choices as to who was gay and who was not. I don't know. You just had to be male, and in your adult years, in your 20s, 30s, maybe into your early 40s, without marriage or a girlfriend or family. That was somewhat of the criteria of the effort. So, would everybody have been gay at the time that was pursued? I really don't know, but I imagine that not everybody was. But it was a little hard to, if you were a young man and who was participating as a professional in the community in one capacity or another. It may have been hard to prove that you were not gay. So that's sort of where we were in 1963.
Thank you for sharing, Mary Lou Spartz. Mo Longworth, throughout the program for Blue Ticket, you have pieces of your research that you've published. You have a piece that relates to Mary Lou's story as well that you want to share?
Mary Lou, maybe I'll let you tell your part of it first about the bank calling you in the night. Did you want to share that part?
Well, Mo, I need to correct that just a little bit. It wasn't in the night, but
I thought it was after hours, but
if that works well for the show, that's fine with me. No, I got a call one day, and from the bank, and the bank said, "Mary Lou, would you like to buy the house next door to you?" At that time, we owned a house on Main Street, almost to the top of the hill, and the one below us, which was a wonderful it was in the 19-teens. I'm not sure exactly when it was built. But it was a nice little Edwardian. It's not little, I shouldn't say that. It was a nice little Edwardian. And I said, well, I know that has been sold, and I knew it had been sold to the administrative person at the Juno Clinic, whom I just spoke of. And we'd looked forward to having him as a neighbor. And they said, well, that didn't go through. So would you like to buy it? And this is what we can offer you. So I said, well, yeah, I guess I would. So I acquired a second house on Main Street. And that's how we got that.
And he was the gentleman who'd been sent away?
Yes.
Do you suspect that he saw any of that money from the house sale?
I have no idea of what happened on that level. I do know that a few years ago someone had contacted him, and he had over the years been living in Florida, I believe. But I don't know what the circumstances were as far as his investment in the home, in the house. I know it was fair market value at the time, so whatever he had invested, I hope he was able to get compensation for it.
So, Mary Lou, what Scott referred to is, and I don't know if I've had a chance to tell you, Mary Lou, that after we did a reading of the scenes from the play at the State Museum last year, or the Jack, one of those, someone who was in the audience visiting Juno as a visitor, because she's moved away since, called me and told me that she knew what house it was because she bought it from you and knew the story of the gentleman being sent away who would have owned it had he not been sent away. And then that you got it, and then she got it. And she said what she thought was very fascinating is that even as the next owner down, she knew the story attached to that house, and that that house would have belonged to that man, and that she felt a little, you know, there was sort of an honoring of him, or even just feeling badly that he never got to live in it like she did.
Well, I think I know whom you're speaking of, and that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that people in this era, watching people go away, would feel like the person that wrote to Bobby Lee and sent that letter about witnessing these people losing their lives, the gentleman who lost his music store, and how disheartened he was and how sad it was for her to see that. I would even think there might be some of that in, you know, left in the fabric of these things, of using the things that the people left behind.
Well, I was overwhelmed with my own life at that time. I was in the process of having babies and taking care of babies and being involved, deeply involved in theater, and doing all kinds of work on that end of things. And of course, I had a household and a husband and a dog and all the things that go with it.
So.
I didn't have too much time to contemplate, other than, you know, what I was left hanging, I guess, as I think most of the time everyone else has been left hanging, so to speak. These were just fragments. There was nothing in the newspaper. There was nothing on the radio. There was no public information that was available. And I have not done a lot of research in the state library in terms of their historic information on microfiche, and now of course other very much more detailed information that comes through the internet, but it was a time when I knew about this, but no one talked about it other than just admitting that this had happened. And no one mentioned it anywhere, it was just there, but it was just hanging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a difference between being quiet and being silent. And this story was certainly silent.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're having a conversation today about Blue Ticket and being blue ticketed in the 1960s if you were a suspected gay man. From Juno, on the phone is Mary Lou Spartz. Also here in the studio is Bobby Lee Daniels and also Mo Longworth, playwright of Blue Ticket. This makes me think of the importance of art in bringing history back into our consciousness. Bobby Lee, you were just talking about the character Morley, or the Coast Guard detective, is that right?
Correct.
That must have brought back awful memories for you from your time being investigated down in Washington.
It kind of did. There were different people then, of course, but they weren't quite as sinister as this actor was. But they certainly were pressuring me when they wanted to take a test and either confess or agree that my former roommate was gay. I think they were really trying to work on it.
And interesting to learn that this did sound like a collaboration between the Juneau Police Department and the Coast Guard.
I suppose, yes.
Have you learned more about that, Mo?
I haven't. I've heard people that there was somebody in the audience the other night who told me her story, that she was personal friends with the hairdresser who was sent away. And she said that he came to her to say goodbye and told her he was leaving. And she said, well, don't do it. Don't leave. And he said, I don't have a choice. I have to leave. And then he moved, and she even went to visit him in his new home. And I said, who was it that told him he had to leave? And she said, I don't know. I never asked. And so what's so interesting is that you might ask someone else that was that woman's neighbor, and they wouldn't have known a thing about it. Like Bobby Lee said, if you didn't know someone who was going sent away, you'd never even know. And it was just by happenstance if you would hear about it, like Mary Lou said, because there was no news. And it did seem, though, Mary Lou, wasn't it, that it was pretty common. Most people who told me these stories told me they felt it was associated with the police and vigilantes connected with the police working together. Is that what you would think, Mary Lou?
I think that was probably a good now that I think about it, the police were involved, and there was the citizens group that had taken it upon themselves to pursue this, and I mean we had always had gay men in the community. It was, you know, there was those who could be identified. We had one in the 40s, a man named John Doyle Bishop, who was a very gay male, and worked for Barron's Department Store at the time, and left here and went to Seattle and really made a name for himself in Seattle. So, it was not as if we were isolated from all of the rest of it. Of the world in terms of people's preferences, but this was the first time that we had taken on the getting rid of those people, with such a fierce energy.
And it wasn't limited to Juneau. One of the people I interviewed was on the police in Ketchikan in the 70s. And it was in her instruction, in her orientation manual, how to detect a homosexual. Hmm. And there was just amazing information, misinformation, about how you would detect a homosexual. And in Ketchikan, they had sent women away, too, who were suspected homosexuals. And someone that I interviewed in Anchorage was in Sitka at the time of hearing about what was going on, and he was in the position of changing jobs and moving to Juneau when he somehow heard through the grapevine that it wasn't safe here for gay men. And it, like Mary Lou said, we didn't use the word gay then. I say we, you know, I was 12 years old then, and I didn't use any of those words. I didn't know anything. But when he was all ready to move, and he suddenly gave up a job and a really important career in public office, and did not feel free to come back to Juneau and move to Anchorage so he could blend in.
Mary Lou, have you had a chance to see the play yet?
No, I haven't. I will be going, of course, but not this last weekend. I just couldn't do it this weekend.
How about you, Bobby Lee?
I saw it Saturday night and gave this oratory at the same time.
Sharing these stories. Did watching this play get staged, did it bring back other memories or other emotions?
Probably not too much for me. Of course, I thought about it and just said to myself, whew, I'm glad I wasn't out then and living here when that was going on. And probably if I was living here during that, I would have had my same old roommate, and probably nothing would have happened at all between his interrogation and my interrogation down in Seattle. We wouldn't be on the radar at all regarding that.
How about you, Mary Lou, in sharing these stories and thinking about this play, is it bringing back other memories or emotions for you?
Well, of course, that was then. And looking at it from today's perspective, you know, you just are horrified at what was accepted as a need or as a desirable thing to do to other people. So it just brought back that kind of what do we do now kind of feeling that you get when it's all so strange and new, and you have a life and you keep going on with your life and you kind of put it in the background. So in that sense, it did raise, that same issue of how could we allow this to happen to people that we knew and cared about.
Do you?
Our perspective from 2019, and things have changed, and they have changed for the better, but there's still a long way to go, Scott.
Right. I was going to ask you for advice for people who see inequity today. What would you tell them to do?
I guess I would just hope that people would recognize that there is a different approach to life for each one of us, and none of us is without prejudice of some kind, but we really need to accept the fact that as our lives evolve, that we become who we become, and we're not exactly perfect all the time. And there are those people who create hatred and discord, and who are also, I believe, very frightened of anything that does not fit in to their particular point of view. And these are the people that we have to be careful of. We have to be aware of people who are determined to put us all in the same box and make us all march to the same drummer.
Bobby Lee, would you add to that advice?
I think it's very good advice. Yes. I don't know what else to add to it. Thank you, Mary Lou.
Yeah, thank
you're
you
welcome,
for sharing
my
that.
Dear.
Yeah.
In Mo Longworth, what has staging this play done for you as a playwright and, I guess our community as a whole?
It's sort of interesting because right before I came here today, one of the people I interviewed called me, and he's taken upon himself because he's been so inspired by the stories that I've gathered to contact. He grew up in Juneau, and he's contacting everyone he can think of and collecting more stories. And he said, Mo, what you've started is a living story, and it's just growing and growing. And I feel like so honored to be part of that living story. And when I first received these stories from people, right from the time I moved here, when I came in 92 was when I heard the first story, I've just been, they're all snippets like this, like Bobby Lee's story and Mary Lou's story, and I felt such a desire that these had to come forward, and I assumed it had to come from someone who had some experience in, like a historian and who would find out all the facts. And I even contributed to that and Anyway, people did research it and came up dry. And I'm so, sometimes I think now that maybe my whole destiny in life was to come here and tell this story. Because I feel like it was a story that's like a treasure chest that I get to carry and move forward. And I wasn't able to write it as a factual book because I don't have enough information because those people are gone. But putting it into a fiction really freed it up, freed up the story, and people feel like it feels accurate to them. Would you say, Bobby Lee? People who see the play mm-hmm. feel like the parts that they know about is how it sort of felt back then. And I'm not sure if I'm even answering your question, Scott, but it's like, where do you go from here? I'm not sure, but I sure hope this story, the play, makes it beyond Juno, because we know it was happening in Ketchikan, in Anchorage, in Boise, in probably every community there was. And it probably still is. Someone who came to the play said that his younger brother disappeared from Juneau recently, and he was a gay Native man, and he still doesn't know where he went or what happened.
Wow. Can you please remind us how many more opportunities we have to see Blue Ticket?
We have shows the next two weekends. So this weekend coming up, we have a show Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then on the last weekend of October, we're not going to do a show on Thursday of Halloween. But basically, it's at 7:30 Thursday through Sunday, except Halloween, until November 3rd, when we're having our only matinee. And that's at 3 o'clock on November 3rd, Sunday afternoon. If we have sold out most of our shows, on opening weekend, which is just fantastic. Thank you, Juno. And if we keep selling out, I don't know if we'll try to figure out to do more shows. But right now, that's the only times we have.
And best place to get tickets?
You can get tickets in person at Hearthside or the Jack, and you can get them online at jahc.org at the box office. And it's really advisable to get a ticket in advance. It's also cheaper to get it in advance. It's $3 more at the door.
Okay. Well, if you can believe it, we have about a minute left.
Wow.
Bobby Lee Daniels, any last thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I don't know. It was kind of an interesting experience. And also, I should note that this was 6 years before the Stonewall event in New York City, where people say, we've had enough. And so I suppose that's why it went the way it did, where people did leave and did have to leave. And who knows what would have happened to them if they would have tried to stay, some of them. They might have been beaten up or I don't know. So that's all I want to say about it at this time. Thank you, Scott, for
You're welcome.
Interviewing me.
Thank you, Bobby Lee Daniels. Mary Lou Spartz, any last thoughts for our listeners?
Well, thank you, Scott, for doing this. The only thing I'd just like to reinforce is that, you know, we live here and we think of ourselves as good neighbors and good people, and we think of ourselves as reaching out to those who are what we may call lesser. But we have to be very aware that within the community there are different points of view, and that we have to make sure that those points of view are not stifled in any way, but that we're knowledgeable about the fact that they cannot stand in the way of people's civil rights or personal rights, and we need to continue to expand on those for those who may be living here and working and being involved with the community. for their benefit, too.
All right. Mary Lou Spartz, thank you for sharing your time and stories with us today. Bobby Lee Daniels, Mo Longworth, you can re-listen to this conversation at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.